Welcome to BoxCast, where faculty and staff at the Boggs Center on Developmental Disabilities explore best practice, showcase success stories, and help listeners envision possibilities for innovation through interviews with state and national experts. Part of Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, the Boggs Center is New Jersey's University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities and Leadership, Education, and Neurodevelopmental Disabilities Program. I'm Bethany Chase, Training and Consultation Specialist with the Transition and Employment Projects. In this episode, we'll be discussing inclusion and employment advocacy with Wendy Lacy. Wendy Lacy is the founder and owner of Cornerstone Montclair in Montclair, New Jersey. Cornerstone Montclair is a business with a vision of community in which people of all abilities have opportunities for meaningful work, social engagement, and active lifestyles. Cornerstone Montclair is a vibrant hub of activity that welcomes people with various disabilities to work and enjoy life alongside their peers. Wendy Lacy lives with her family in Montclair, New Jersey. They have four children, including 18-year-old Evelyn, who has Down syndrome, and a crazy dog. The Lacys are strong advocates for disability inclusion in both community and educational settings. Wendy serves on several boards, including the New Jersey Coalition for Inclusive Education, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Essex, Hudson, and Union Counties, Montclair Art Museum, and the Advisory Board at Montclair State University's College of Education and Human Services. She also sits on Montclair Township's People with Disabilities Committee. Wendy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to have the chance to sit down and chat with you.
I just want to give a full disclosure while we begin the podcast that I am a Montclair resident and so also a big fan of your business. And so I'm particularly happy to be here and asking you questions. And I'm really excited to show what you're doing and what we're doing in Montclair to the broader community. So it's really such a treat. So again, thank you. Thank you so much. I am wondering if you can first just tell us about your family and just kind of, you know, orient us with your day-to-day.
Oh, my day-to-day is so chaotic. We have four children and they are all teenagers now. So I have three students at Montclair High School, a sophomore, a junior, my daughter Evelyn, who is a senior. So this is a big year for her and for us. And then we have one daughter in college as well. Bunch of pets, business. So I would say we have a very full life.
Four kids, business owner on top of everything else. I was listening to another podcast that you did recently where you basically said if someone ever asked you, you know, 10 years ago, if you would be where you are right now, running a business as an entrepreneur, doing all of the things that you're doing, you would have thought they were crazy, right?
Absolutely crazy. I still think I'm crazy sometimes. But yeah, before kids, right out of college, I mean, the last thing that I thought I would ever want to do was be an entrepreneur. And then right behind that would be own a retail store. But, you know, life takes you unexpected directions. And here I am. And it's been very fun. And, you know, after having four kids pretty close together, I just have to say, as a woman, it was actually great and so refreshing to start a business and so stimulating for my mind. And so there's all these reasons why I did it that have to do with the world of disabilities and disability awareness and disability rights. But, you know, the fantastic sidebar was that after spending, you know, the majority of my time and energy raising children, to start something new and creative was really just good for me. So there's a little bit of selfish part to that too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we definitely will get to hearing all about Cornerstone. I think to set the stage for people who aren't as familiar, tell us a little bit about Evelyn and her educational experience. So she's a senior and she's been in inclusive education since she was. So tell me a little bit about what that's been like.
All right. So I'm going to go way back. I'm going to go way, way back to the first time that I really felt like everything was going to be okay. All right. And so we knew prenatally that Evelyn was going to have Down syndrome. And the benefit to that is we living in our community here in Montclair, I immediately was able to connect with parents who had children and teens who had Down syndrome. And so I was able to get a lot of advice from them and see where life was taking them and their loved ones. But, you know, even though I thought we were prepared, having a child with a disability is hard and a bit of a shock to the system. And I remember clearly a turning point in our life was when she was just after 1 year old and we went on a vacation together, like because we went to Cape Cod. It was the simplest thing. And I felt like I cried the whole time for very good reasons because she was in the mix and with her cousins and, you know, riding in the baby seat on the back of the bike with my husband and doing things that any other baby would be doing on vacation. And I remember feeling like such an overwhelming sense of relief that life was going to be okay, that we needed to just continue to find a way for her to be just a part of the fabric of everything going on around us. And I think that's what we set out to do, right? And so getting back to the more immediate past, we knew right away that inclusion and inclusive education is something, a path we wanted to follow. We thought that having her in the school system with her siblings, with peers who were typically developing would be good for her. The advice we got was to look ahead 20 years and where do you see her? What do you want for her? And living as independently as possible was what we wanted. And we felt strongly that inclusive education was what was going to get her there. So she has been in a general education setting since she was a toddler. So what did that look like? And it looks like this, in elementary school, she was in a general education class with an aide supporting her, oftentimes a shared aide, maybe a one-on-one aide. She went through the school system and that basic structure. And then the high school, Montclair High School has small learning communities. And so she is in the Center for Social Justice and she still has some additional assistance academically and some supports, but a lot of what they're learning about in that small learning community, social justice is very applicable to the world of disability rights and disability awareness. So inclusion is, you know, who's to say what she would be like if she didn't take this path, but I really have felt that having her learn amongst her peers in the same schools as her siblings has been invaluable to her as she works towards independence.
Absolutely. I think it's remarkable too, that advice that you got when she was really young of look ahead, look down the road. I talk to a lot of parents where this has not been their experience, that it's been a lot of safety first, wrap them up in the bubble wrap, make sure nothing ever happens to them. And I'm sure that as a mom, I'm also a mom, like, of course, that's a part of what it means to be a parent, but that's pretty progressive advice that you got.
It was at the time. As we moved along the journey, like you talked about, safety bubble, right? I mean, I think we took a very different approach, and that was we took that baby everywhere. Like, I wanted that baby to be seen. We were in music together. We were at Little Gym because I think the feeling was I wanted her to grow up and be a fixture in town, right? Not a mascot, but someone that you would see around town. And if you were in a restaurant, you know, and a classmate saw her, they would give her a wave. They wouldn't stare at her because she looks different than other people. And so she went everywhere. Traveled a ton. I don't know, I'm kind of psychoanalyzing myself here. I mean, I felt like I had something to prove, right? And that might have been good for her, but I felt like I wanted the world to see, here is this child, this baby, this kid, this young adult who is out in the world like everybody else, enjoying the same things.
Yeah, you know, and that's certainly seen, you know, where your story went and leading to the cornerstone. Before we get to that, I'm just curious, within school or within community, it seems like predominantly you've had really mostly positive experiences with Evelyn. Have you had any experiences with inclusion, or what experience, I'm sure you've had them, with inclusion where you just feel like you're running up against a wall, or it's been really frustrating for you or for her?
I would say, I mean, certainly, I don't want to sugarcoat things. We've had overall a very good experience, but there are challenges along the way. There are educators who aren't passionate about inclusion. There are paraprofessionals who have not worked out well because they don't want to facilitate inclusion. There are fortunately only a handful of problems with peers, but they came up every so often. There's all kinds of misunderstandings along the way. You know, she got in trouble. Listen, I actually don't, this is a hard story to tell, but you know, I'll share it. Her second day of kindergarten, I would say, she was on the bus, and I mean, kindergarten's a huge deal for any parent. I mean, you can imagine sending a child who was almost still nonverbal at that point, right? And so I got a call from principal saying that another parent had complained because Evelyn poked her daughter on the bus. And it ends up Evelyn poked the girl. Evelyn was not super verbal at that point in time. So there was no hitting. She poked her to get her attention. And I ended up in the principal's office and I was indignant about this. Like, I mean, first of all, the child who got poked was like in second grade and Evelyn was like a kindergartner. And I cannot understand why a parent felt so protective that they would bring it to that level. So I do feel like we had some challenges. That was an example right out of the chutes where you want to, and I was pretty bitter, you know? I mean, here is a time when I wanted to celebrate like every other parent, my kindergartner getting off that bus the first, second day of school. And instead I end up in the principal's office because somebody is pretty ignorant about how their other kids might be challenged communicating.
Right, right. And it's hard to not feel that was pretty deliberately targeted. But if it was a poke from another girl saying, hey, look at my necklace.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but overall, a good experience.
So she's a senior.
Yes.
So you are you're looking at the transition from school into what happens next. I know transition is a tricky time for young adults. It's also a difficult time for families and parents as they kind of look ahead. How are you feeling about this graduation and moving on to the next step? How are you?
So I'm okay. All I can say, you know, I know that I will look back, that we will look back. My husband is super involved with Evelyn and all the kids. So I very confident we will look back and deeply miss the structure of the school system, right? And the structure of the day and what she learns. And on the other hand, I feel ready to move on to the next step. And I think she does too. I think we have had our full of IEPs, and I know that concept doesn't totally go away, but I feel like on the academic level and those challenges, it's just, it's time for the next step in life. Even though I know that I will deeply miss this one.
That's excellent. Excellent. You seem like you're doing good. Still breathing.
Yeah. It's also interesting to hear her as a self-advocate and an individual talk about how she's feeling. Like, you know, most of the year she's been so excited and talks about graduation and the prom and everything else, all these milestones. And then there are moments where she tells me she's scared. And I know she is. And it's, you know, it's everyone who's 18 doesn't know what's next or going to college. It's a big deal. And so I think she feels overwhelmed by the transition in life too.
Yeah. I imagine she's saying out loud what a lot of her peers are just thinking inside and like, we got this, no problem. And she's the one being like, guys, this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's pivot and shift gears here and talk more about Cornerstone. So we've learned about Evelyn and about your experiences with inclusion. I love that image of her on vacation and of you just realizing, oh my goodness, it's going to be okay. She just wants to be part of the mix. Can you tell us, you know, specifically what motivated you to start the business and how you came up with the model that you have?
Well, I guess as you know, as she went along her journey, especially when she became a teen, you started to see the gap between her and her peers widen, and in what they were going to experience in life was going to be different because employment is so difficult. Opportunities to be included get more challenging the older you get. And so I think back when she was in elementary school, maybe all the way into high school, she played rec soccer. She, like I mentioned, she did little gym, she did gymnastics, but the older you get, the gap grows a bit wider and the harder it is to find ways to be stimulated in your own community, be a part of what's going on, feel fulfilled and happy and get jobs, right? And so my husband and I for years really brainstormed different ways that we could create jobs and opportunities for people to feel like they were part of their own communities. And then an opportunity came to us because the building, Cornerstone Montclair, is a philosophy of inclusion, but it also is a physical space where it plays out. And so we had the opportunity because this building, which is actually fairly close to our house, was on the market for a little while, and we were able to turn some of our dreams and brainstorming into a concrete business plan.
And from the website, I have your three pillars. So it says here, I'll just read it out loud. Cornerstone Montclair's mission is to foster a vibrant community hub that rests on three pillars. One, providing opportunities for meaningful work for people of all abilities. Two, providing opportunities for social engagement. And three, providing opportunities for active lifestyles. Can you tell me what your process was in coming up with these three particular pillars?
Okay, so when I thought about how to articulate what Cornerstone Montclair's vision and mission was about, I really thought about what community means. And first of all, I think community is really about feeling a sense of fellowship with other people in your community. And how do you do that? How do you feel like a fellowship with all the people that live around you, work around you? And so certainly social engagement is a part of that. And that can look at different ways for different people. Active lifestyles. I mean, I think many of us think about mental health, physical well-being. And so that's part of the active lifestyle pillar. And then work. I mean, listen, supporting yourself, feeling independent, feeling empowered has a lot to do with meaningful work. And so that's why I was focusing on those three things. And there are certainly lots of other ways to feel like you're a part of your community, but those were the three areas that I wanted to focus on. And then when I started Cornerstone Montclair and I started filling up the building, so I owned the building and then I owned the general store, but I was looking for people to be a part of Cornerstone Montclair, the physical building, who also could support those pillars in some way with their own businesses or support in some other way the philosophy of inclusion for people with disabilities. And so the people who are here in this space support those pillars and the in inclusion in some way.
So walk through for those folks who haven't been to your business, there's a lot going on there, right? It is a hub. So there's all these different spaces. There's a lot happening at Cornerstone. Why don't you walk everyone through what it's like to come to Cornerstone and what they would find there?
Sure. So it is a small commercial building that's two floors on a corner in Upper Montclair. And so, as I mentioned, I own the building and I own the general store. The people or the businesses that take up space in this building are actually separate businesses, all united with the idea of supporting community inclusion for people with disabilities, whether that's the main focus of their separate business or it's just a sidebar, right? So I refer to these long-term tenants as mission partners because that's truly what they are. I wasn't looking to just plug some holes and get some rental income here. These were people who believed in what I believed in and what a community should look like. So when you come, you'll see the Inclusive Movement Center. And that is a fitness center for kids that they are well known for their Ninja Warrior classes. All of their classes have kids with different abilities integrated into their classrooms, their Ninja Warrior classes. They are not therapists. They are people who used to be phys ed teachers in different school districts and who are experts in adaptive physiology. So if you go into their space, you're going to see all kinds of outstanding equipment that they're able to move around in all different ways so that kids with all abilities can be a part and take part of the activity of class and learn skills with them as well. And then they also employ people with disabilities. They have several interns who have some type of disability. And then I'll get to the store last. But upstairs, I have Norma Franculo, who is a special education attorney. So she has an office up here. She also does a lot of parent workshops. Creative Speech Solutions was here from the very beginning, and they are traditional speech language therapists, but they also do social skills groups, or they'll help with resume building or interview prep. And so, for example, my daughter, Evelyn, has been with their practice, I think, if she's 18, maybe 17 years, a very, very long time. And as she went through high school and still did some private speech with them, instead of just doing traditional speech therapy approaches, they were helping her do a YouTube channel. She thought for some time that she wanted to be a makeup artist. And so they were helping her set up a private YouTube channel and practicing her speech in a very practical way that could help her professionally down the line. Maria Sanders, who's a parent coach, and she works with all types of parents dealing with all types of problems, but she's done some support groups here before with me. And then we have a social worker who uses the space. We have a community room that I'm here in right now, and the community room is used for just about everything. And I have some great examples of how it organically is fed into the mission. The adult school has senior citizen yoga here. We have support groups, social circles, things that have absolutely nothing to do with disabilities that happen here. Girl Scout troop meetings. So it's a nice gathering place. Then I have the general store, which I like to say is really, really the mission in action on a day-to-day basis. So if you want to come in and really get a feel for what Cornerstone Montclair is about, you should come shopping at the store. And that's not just a sales pitch. It's a retro style general store. And, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning, I think I have no retail experience. And one of the things I loved about doing a general store is just from my memory of going to Cape Cod or other vacation places, general stores are always like a little bit chaotic, right? They're not perfectly coiffed and set up. And I felt like that worked for my life. So I liked that idea. And I like the idea of having something a little bit for everybody. I happen to be across from a middle school that has 500 kids in it. And I wanted something in that lower floor that was going to get kids in here, seeing people with disabilities working here. Because at its heart, Cornerstone Montclair is about changing perspectives as much as it is about creating opportunities. And so with the general store, I was able to have, you know, quote unquote, penny candy. I'm a gift store. I have Montclair merchandise. I've got a cool retro fridge with goodies in it. And so I created a store that was going to be attractive, you know, to a wide range of people. And then half of my employees here have disabilities and half don't. And that's, you know, at times a guesstimate, because honestly, one thing I have learned is that most people have their challenges, whether they share them with you or not. So I've had people that I thought were neurotypical and coming in with not a lot of challenges who ended up having some challenges that we worked around and we continue to work around. I also in the store, I'll go back to employment in a minute, but also in the store, I carry a lot of art made by artists with disabilities and some products made by entrepreneurs who have disabilities. So that's kind of integrated in throughout everything. But going back to employment, my model, you know, what I'm trying to do is give people work experience, real life work experience in a store that is very public and that they interact with a lot of different people in. And so what I do is tend to hire a lot of people at fewer hours so that I can reach more people and give me that experience. So I have about 12 people who work here, which is probably, honestly, I could do with less, but it's nice to have people working together and overlapping and learning from each other.
So you hire half people with at least disclosed disabilities and half people who don't have a disability or have not disclosed a disability. Have you noticed the impact that they have had on one another, just working side by side with somebody?
I mean, definitely. First of all, it's great because oftentimes if I have a new employee start, some of my employees who have disabilities love helping with the training. And that is really changes perspectives right there, whether it's giving a tour of the store, explaining how we unpack deliveries, you know, that really changes perspectives. If you come in, you're neurotypical and somebody with a disability is training you, right? And so that's fantastic. And then I think just building the relationships is great. You know, we have one employee, he's neurotypical. He has a podcast about sports. He's completely sports nuts. And then, you know, what that interest is a common interest among several employees who have disabilities. So they have conversations all the time. And so what I really like to see is the impact. The impact doesn't always have to, you know, hit you on the head. It's very subtle. You know, he knows that somebody with a disability can have a similar interest as him and he can have a really nice dialogue. And going back to how I defined community earlier, I used the word fellowship. You know, fellowship of a common interest. And there you go, right? It's as simple as that. I also feel like another anecdote I like is I had this kind of alludes to the issue of having an invisible disability. I had an employee working on putting together like one of those chalk sidewalk signs. And it was taking her a very, very long time to draw out the sign. And at some point I got a touch frustrated and said, you know, how much more time do you need for the sign? And she said, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know that you know this about me, but I have OCD and sometimes it really kicks in like it is now. And it's making me very difficult for me to finish this project. Well, then another employee from across the room said, oh, I have OCD too. And I have this. And then they started comparing letters. They had a lot of overlap. And I think what I like about that story is first, I learned something like about invisible disabilities, right? And sometimes you have to ask and communicate clearly, whether you're the boss or the employee, about what is behind your challenges sometimes, or what is behind you not doing your job in an expected way. But I also love this story because they felt safe enough to tell it, right? They felt safe enough to share those things that other people might perceive as weaknesses, share them as part of who they are, and bond over that. And then they went to Dunkin' Donuts, got coffee after. So there's something really fun and nice about that story too.
Absolutely. And it's because you've created this space where people feel welcome to show up as who they are. And, you know, that it's not something to be ashamed of. It's just like, oh, this is my challenge. Oh, this is my challenge. Cool. Let's go get coffee, right? I think employment in particular has such a powerful ability to do that, where, you know, to your point, that it doesn't have to be this big, deep, hit you over the head, like the clouds clearing, but rather what it is just human beings working together, offering each other support and just getting to know another person, and how simple and yet really profoundly meaningful it is when people just are in community with one another. It's incredible.
And so that is a little bit of why I'm actually not a nonprofit, right? I'm a for-profit business, although I like to say that I'm like self-sustaining. It is self-sustaining building. But you know, I don't think people ask me all the time, oh, so you're a nonprofit? And I'm not. I mean, why do I have to be a nonprofit? You know, I wanted to send a message that you don't have to be a nonprofit to do the right thing for your community, right? It's not charity. It's just doing the right thing, giving people opportunities. And sometimes people, it takes some time for them to understand that. But yeah, it's just a matter of being together. Just simply being a business, right? Not necessarily a nonprofit. As the years have gone by here, it's been 5 years now since I started this. I actually tell the story in the story about the mission a little less frequently, to customers, less frequently, or I wait because it's until they finish their shopping experience, because it's really nice for them to come in and enjoy the store and say they love what I have, or this has been so fun, and then tell them, because then it just feeds into this is just the way it should be, right? You shouldn't know this necessarily. You should be here because you like it and you want to be here, not just because of the mission.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's the best place to go Christmas shopping town, I think.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. And I want to touch base on what you said about not being a nonprofit, and how I'm not even sure, you know, you said that that this wasn't even really your field. You don't consider yourself, you know, an expert, as it were, although I would certainly argue differently, that this model of creating a good business is best practice from the disability research, and how people who assume that if it's somehow includes or prioritizes the inclusion of folks with disabilities, that the only way for it to be sustainable is that it would be a nonprofit, that it has to be this, you know, this sort of separate, kind of protected, like, you know, nobody comes to Cornerstone and thinks, oh, this is just so nice that this business is here. You know, there isn't that, that's not how the community responds to your business. And that is really remarkable, because so many other businesses where parents have understandably created a business model because they're worried about employment opportunities for their adult children, create opportunities that just become, people pop in to, quote, do the right thing. And your business is just literally a cornerstone of the community. And the fact that you have a story of disability behind it is just like, it's like, oh, that's so interesting. Meanwhile, the art is beautiful. The space is accessible and everybody wants to hold their event there. My kids love the penny candy, you know, and it really is, I think, such a model for other family members, other parents, or just other members of the community, of how to do this well And I really want to highlight that for anyone listening. We do get a lot of families that call and say, I was thinking about opening up this nonprofit because I'm worried about employment. And this is such an incredible example of how to truly make change while opening a good business that's just good business. It's also providing an opportunity for young people who are working there, who are shopping there. You have to wonder if that little second grader on the bus, if she had bought, you know, some goodies at the Cornerstone, right? If she would have had a different reaction to her daughter on the bus that day, right?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point.
Yeah. My kids have been in there and they, you know, they're looking at candy and looking at things and asking for all the doodads and trying to get all the things. And on the way out, they might say, oh, you know, mom, does so-and-so have a disability? I'm like, yep. And they're like, cool. I like this blow pop.
See, now, how amazing is that, right? And, you know, I think that things are much better than when I was younger. I mean, we really have come very far. We still have very far to go when it comes to disability rights and acceptance, but it is really nice to see that kind of nonchalance. Yeah. Oh, okay. I get it.
That's interesting. Like I just noticed something and I'm now going back to my lollipop. Like that's what we want kids to do.
Absolutely. I love it. I love those kids. One of my first mission partners was Matt Chinelli, who was the founder of the Inclusive Movement Center. Matt has since moved to Virginia for a different opportunity, but the center is run by Bobby Rinaldi and Nick Solise. But Matt used to say, one of his mottos was for everyone, with everyone. And, you know, and he used to remind me of this all the time. You need to have things that are attractive to everyone and just make sure that everyone includes people with disabilities. And really, that's what it's about. And I remember I used to be like, well, Matt, I need to think of some kind of activity or social event to have in the community room. What if I did something? What activity would work for everybody? And he said, listen, you just have to find an activity that you think is fun for teens and then make sure it's open to everybody. He said, you're thinking of it the wrong way. And so it was always nice to get those reminders.
Yes.
And one of the stories I really like and really is emblematic of in community inclusion organically and appealing to everyone has to do with a group called the Montclair Story Salon that is run by an artist, Liz Samuels. And so this is almost like an open mic kind of night. It's planned, but there are like five or six artists who will get up and do spoken word or stories. And when Liz came to me about renting the community room for that event, for a story salon, she didn't really know much about my mission. And when I explained it to her and what the building was for, she said, oh, that sounds great. You know, do you know of anybody with a disability who would like to be a part of our story salon? And Manal Rosenblum, who is a friend of mine, and she is a young woman who has Down syndrome. She is amazing at spoken word. And so she came and performed there and she was amazing. And I love this story because this was an evening that had 30 people in the audience, maybe more than that, listening to people sing, listening to people tell stories, watching an artist do a live sketch during the whole event. And Manal was just a part of that. And people just saw her as a part of that. And to me, that is so emblematic of what our community should be like.
Absolutely. That moment should be incredibly ordinary. And because it was so ordinary, it's actually pretty extraordinary because we still have some work to do, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on that note, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I'm hopeful that your business gives people some great ideas and inspires folks to create more inclusive spaces that are favorites in their communities and just happen to have a story of disability behind it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat. It was great. And thanks for all you guys do. I really, I was reading a little bit about the Bog Center, and the thing that really jumped out at me is the lifespan approach. And that really, I think that's in the introduction or maybe your mission statement, but lifespan approach is what we have in common because I'm really trying to look for opportunities, engagement throughout people's whole lives.
Wendy, thank you so much for being with us today and best of luck with your business. And I'm sure that I will be in it very soon. Thanks for listening to this episode of BogsCast, a podcast by the Bog Center on Developmental Disabilities. A full transcript of this episode can be found at thebogcenter.podbean.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming service to stay up to date with the newest episodes. To learn more about the Bog Center, visit our website at bogcenter.rwjms.rutgers.edu and follow us on Facebook.